Well, hello everybody. Can you hear in the back? Yeah, everything's clear? Well, for those of you that were not there in the induction week, my name is Angelica, and I will be teaching this statistics for finance course. So today is lecture one, and everybody is either very motivated, thinking, oh yes, I will not have problems in statistics, or a bit scared, yeah? So I don't know in what part of that group you are, but let's work hard. And as I said in the introduction, in the induction week, the material starts at a really, really basic point, yeah? But the good news is that it's not going to be like that all the time. So we will start, as we start building concepts and background, getting into more interesting and sophisticated things. So we will start from the basics. So maybe today after this class, you will go out and think, it's really boring, I'm not going back to that lecture. Angelica is super boring. But maybe I'm boring, yeah. But the point I want to make is that material is going to get more complicated. So today will not really give you, the class of today will not give you really a flavor of what the course is going to be like, yeah? What it will give you a flavor is of how my lecture notes look like, and then you will maybe take a decision if you decide buying the textbook or not. And also, it will give you an idea of what is my teaching approach. So hopefully we will be meeting very often, every Monday, every Thursday, and your tutorials start next week. So hopefully everybody already knows their tutorial group. Is that the case? No, okay. So Claire Local, which is the secretary joint with Natalie Honeywood, already have lists and with your names and to which tutorial you have been assigned to, yeah? So in order not to avoid a lot of work for them answering individual emails, what I will ask them to do is to send an email, a general one, with these lists so that you can check in which tutorial group you are, yeah? And I will please ask you to stay in the tutorial group that you have been assigned to. And the reason for that is that you will see that we will have some room constraints. Yeah, so if people is moving, it becomes a bit uncomfortable because some groups may be packed and therefore there are not enough chairs for people who was originally there to sit. And the aim of the tutorials is to have small groups so that there is a good discussion. Yeah, so if a group turns to be too big, yeah, then the purpose of the small tutorial group is lost, yeah? So I encourage you to stay in your tutorial. Most of the tutorials are going to be taught by me. However, two groups are going to be taken by one of my colleagues. The good news is that my colleague is pretty good, so hopefully you will make the most of your tutorial. But also take into consideration that it's not only the responsibility of the tutor for you to have a good tutorial, but it's also your responsibility. So if you go there and you are fully prepared and you have discussed the exercises, you will make the most of that tutorial, yeah? If you go there and you don't have a clue what the material looks like, it doesn't matter how enthusiastic or how good your tutor is, yeah? You will not make the most of your tutorial. So just to conclude, tutorials start next week. The material for the first tutorial is already in WebCT. So if you go to WebCT, you will find two folders. One is called Lectures, and the other folder is called Tutorials, yeah? So every week, I will upload one folder for the weekly tutorial. And at the end of all the tutorials that I think is on Wednesday is the last tutorial, I will load in that same folder the answers for your tutorial. So the good news is that if you don't have enough time to go through all the exercises in your tutorial, you will still have a very detailed set of answers for that tutorial. So you are not only going to be given as an answer a number, yeah? You are going to be given how did we get to that number. So don't get nervous in the tutorials if you don't solve all the exercises. Maybe there's a problem with time. Maybe you and your tutor decide focusing only on a couple of questions because they were more difficult. The answers will be there, yeah? And hopefully, because they are so detailed, you will not struggle when you look at them, maybe by yourselves, okay? So after this lecture, what I normally do is after every lecture, I go to my office, I load the lecture for the following week, so you have a whole week to look at it, and I load the new tutorial for the following week as well. So I will do that every Thursday for you to have the material with lots of advance, yeah? And as I said, the answers to the tutorials are going to be given after the last tutorial of the week, which I think is Wednesdays from 2. No, it cannot be Wednesdays from 2 to 3. Wednesdays at some time, yeah? Any question? No? Everybody looks happy, awake, yeah? Let's keep being happy and awake the whole 2 hours. So what I normally do, because I suppose this is your last lecture, is that I tend to have a very brief break in 1 hour's time. And I don't do that break for me, to be honest. I can keep on going talking forever. But I do it for you guys, yeah? But let's make it short, just for you to go and breathe and relax for a couple of minutes. So then we can finish slightly earlier than 4 o'clock. Yeah? Is that a good arrangement? Yeah? Mobiles off, please. Feel free to drink, but they are very strict on any other kind of food. So please avoid the peanuts or whatever you can have with you. And unfortunately, I lose concentration very easily, which means that if you are going to arrive late or you realize you are arriving late, please wait for the break to get into the room, yeah? Because I will completely lose concentration and I will make you responsible for that, yeah? And another thing, I'm really unhappy because of my loss of concentration when people start talking among them. So if I know that most of the times, well, not most of the times, but many times people are talking about questions or doubts or comments about the lecture. So if you make me part of that conversation, it will be for me better, yes? Not to get distracted. So let's start. So are you sure? No questions? Yeah? So let's start. Today's super easy lecture. We are going to look at some data. We are going to talk about plots, at how to summarize data that we have, and things like that, yeah? Super easy. So this lecture is about statistics, yeah? So we will be talking all the time about statistical methods. And this is pretty easy if you think of it like an exercise that you conduct like routinely, yes? So what we normally have is a problem, yeah? So we formulate a problem, we get some data, we visualize that data, yeah? So sometimes this is a step that a lot of people miss. They only have the data and immediately start working on it. But it's always a good idea to visualize that data, yes? To understand what kind of data it is, if there are outliers, what are the units of that data, if what is the mean, what is the median, etc. So let's visualize that data, do some statistical calculations, and then we are going to interpret results. So this super easy diagram shows you what do I mean by a statistical method. And here we are going to learn some of the techniques to carry out these statistical methods properly, yeah? We are going to learn not how to get the data, yeah? But we are going to learn how to visualize this data. Most importantly, how to carry out some statistical calculations on this data. And finally, which is also super important, how to interpret results that come from these statistical calculations. So something a bit about this class is that although we will look at methodologies, also interpretation is very important, yeah? And you will realize in your exams, because part of the marks that I give are not only for you to get to a result, but also for you to being able to interpret that result, yeah? So we are going to see some of those issues here in this class, but of course, the more you start learning about finance, the better your intuition will get, and that intuition will kind of fit with all the things we are going to see here, yeah? So everything is a process, and let's start with that process. So today, I normally have at the beginning of each lecture, which are the topics, part of the main topic of the class, and in green, unfortunately, you will not see that green part in your handout. In green, I have the points that I wish to cover today, yeah? From 7 points that refer to plots and summaries, I'm planning to cover today 1 to 5, yeah? And 6 and 7 are going to be covered next lecture with the next big topic, yeah? So, of course, this is an aspiration. Sometimes, for whatever reason, I will not finish. Sometimes maybe I will finish before what I planned, but I tend to be very accurate. Yeah, I have taught this lecture 6 years, so more or less I know where to stop, where to go faster, and I'm accurate and finish in topic 5 if I say I will finish in topic 7. But now, because I said that, for sure I will not finish in topic 5 today. Okay, so here we have some data. Let's try to understand what I'm giving you here. This is a sample. In other words, it's just a partition from a population. And we have data from a large survey that was carried out in the UK, yeah? And if we look at, let me see if I have a pointer here. Yeah. So if I look at each row will represent one household, yeah, one person. So this guy is 67 years old. I'm saying that the sex of that guy is 2. We will see what do I mean by that 2. And I give different information of that same person across all this first row, yeah? So each row corresponds to a household. Each column corresponds to a different feature of that household. The features are called variables, and the rows are called observations. So let's see what these variables are about, because we are going to distinguish between different classes of variables, yeah? So in terms of what are these variables, let's think first that this is a sample, and hopefully everybody can think, even if they don't have a strong statistical background, what is the difference between a population or a sample, yes? A sample is just a small subset, or not that small, it's just a subset of the population. And what we have in this, what I'm calling rectangular array, yeah, that is just a fancy name for this data, is a sample, yeah? So the variable label age is simply what is the age in terms of years of the people who responded to this survey. First of all, this we will call a variable like this numeric, and these variables has units. And this is important because only numeric variables you can make like interpretations such as averages, yeah? So taking the average age, for example, of all you hear makes sense, yeah? Because this is a numeric variable. We have a second variable. Always go back to your previous slide, yeah? And after age, the second variable that we have is REG. And this variable stands for geographical region of that household. And if you realize, we have numbers, yeah? We have numbers from 1 to 11. So this number is a code for a region. So here I have written which region each number is represented. So if that household comes from Scotland, you will find number 1. If that one, that household comes from Northwest, number 2, and so on, yeah? This variable is what we know as a categorical variable. Note that if you wanted to take, for example, an average of these, it doesn't really make sense, yeah? If each one of you were given a number depending on the region you are coming from, and I wanted to look at the average is not really telling me a lot, yeah? So in that case, it doesn't make sense. So we have distinguished two main features between categorical and numerical variables. Instead of using numbers, we could have only used strings, yes, names, but we normally like giving codes or creating indices, and as you will see, creating dichotomic variables because it's handy, yeah? We prefer working with numbers because we will be able to use this number in our statistical analysis, yeah? So that is something we normally do. The other variable that you have in your triangular array is one called SOS, S-S-O-C. And this variable stands for social grade. So for example, if individual 1 is labeled with code 1, it means that it comes from the lowest social grade, which is A, yeah? So you can have from 1 to 6, and as you can see from there, A is lower than B, and so on. In this case, we have that SOC is order like H, but it does not have units, yeah? This is just about social grade. It does not really make sense to compute the difference or to average two social measurements. It does make sense to difference two ages. So we have again here the same characteristic we had before, that only it makes sense to perform operations such as averages, yes, differences, or variables that are numerical, yeah? Categorical variables, even if they are ordered, it doesn't really make sense, yeah? Here we mean order, obviously, because you can order from the lowest social grade to the highest social grade. And in the sense of the regions, you cannot really say, you don't really have that order, yeah? So variables are either numeric, categorical, or ordered categorical. And as an important distinction, this course would mainly cover numerical variables, yeah? But we will also see some examples of how to use categorical variables, but as the course progresses. So these numerical variables can be defined either as discrete or continuous. And I'm sure everybody is wondering, why am I here sitting down being taught what a discrete and continuous variable is if I already know it? However, let's remember what's a discrete and a continuous random variable. So most people, even if they know what it is, they make lots of mistakes. And I will ask a general question. Do you think, without having defined discrete and continuous, do you think that, for example, length, yes? The length of a person, how tall a person is it a continuous or a discrete variable? Those of you who think it's a discrete variable, please raise their hands. Those who think who is a continuous variable, raise their hands. And 50% of the people don't have an opinion. So sometimes, maybe your common sense tells you, well, height is something that if I wanted to access in a computer, I would be able to, no? So it's a discrete number, yes? But in real life, we treat height, for example, as a continuous random variable, yes? Because it can take a large number of values, and that we can think of it as continuous, yeah? So let's define properly what do we mean by continuous and discrete. And by discrete, it's only a data point, yes? A few number of possible outcomes. If we have a continuum, yes? If we have different possible values, we think of that variable as continuous. Here, children, age, we think of it as continuous, even though we measure it in years and can easily list its possible values. Yeah, so this is an example of what I was telling you. Sometimes it's not that pretty obvious if it's continuous or discrete, but age we treat it as continuous. And the number of children is more likely to be thought of as a discrete variable, yeah? A good rule when working with a numeric variable is to keep in mind the units in which it is measured. For example, which are the units of age? In our case, there are years. We have to be careful because when we work with percentages, we don't have units. Yeah, we are working with those percentages. So whenever we can, let's never forget what are the units we are using. And there are always to be units everywhere, yeah? And I here write a short paragraph saying why even in percentages, we kind of have some units. Okay, so far, hopefully so good. We have seen what's age, what's SOC, what's education, sex. In this case, I'm giving the value of 1 if the respondent, if the household is male, and 2 if the respondent is female. You could have chosen other values, yeah? Here in this survey, it's 1 and 2. Here, education is going to be given as the terminal age of education. So note that it's not only like 5 or 6, yeah? Here we have ranges. So for example, you are going to give 1 if you have studied 14 or less years. Yes, you have been in educated for at least 14 years. You will give a number 2 if you have been at least educated for 15 years and so on, yeah? Probably most of you are here in what, in number 8? 7, 8. So education has been treated using bins or ranges, yes? And this will be very handy when we work with histograms, and we will see a bit about that later today. So the next variable we are going to see, we have already defined REG, which stands for regions. We are going to look at income. So here we will also have in income ranges. So although the variables are numeric, yeah, it's very handy to work with ranges instead of the value given to income, yeah? So here I have 20 possibilities. And for example, let's look at number 1. This variable is going to be given if your income is between 1,999 or less, and so on. The other variables, if you go back to where we start today, which was the main box with all the data, the triangular array, we also have some variables called cola, rest e, juice, 6. And let's see what those variables mean. Well, they are going to mean indicate if you use a product. So for example, it's going to be 1 if you use that product, and 0 if you don't. For example, if you drink cola, and you're asked, do you drink cola? And you do drink cola, then you are given a 1. If you do not drink cola, you are given a 0. This is called a dummy variable or dichotomic variable. And for you in finance, is a super handy variable. And I will tell you why. We tend in finance to carry out what we know as event studies. In other words, we want to assess what is the impact of an event let's call that event takeover, yeah, the financial crisis, the death of a CEO. You want to see what is the impact of that event on prices, on returns, on whatever value of a company. So in order to do that, if you use a dummy variable, it will be very handy. So imagine you have a time series. You know that in time equals to 13, there was a terrorist attack, and you want to assess if that terrorist attack have an impact on the share price of whatever company. So you will have zero, zero, zeros all over your vector of time, except on the date that the terrorist attack took place, yeah? So this is very handy. So we use a lot of dummy variables in finance to try to assess impacts, yeah? So here so far, we have only been using dummy variables to see if people in this survey are using or not a product, yeah? So we have all these. And the rest of the variables, if you go back to the one of the first slides, represent variables related to TV shows, yeah? So there are also dummy variables or dichotomic variables. It will be given a value of 1 if you watch that specific program, and a value of 0 if you don't watch that specific program. So the programs that are there are, well, Antiques Roadshow. I don't know if you have watched it, super boring. The BBC News, EastEnders, Friends, The Simpsons, and football. So people are asked, do you watch this program? If they do watch it, they are given a value of 1. If they don't watch it, they are given a value of 0. Yeah?
Dummy variables always have a value of 0 or 1, or is it just this case?
No, normally if we call it dichotomic, is that it has 2 values, yeah? But we normally think of values 1 of 0. So in this case, we have 3 types of variables. We have demographics, which are the ones related, for example, to age, to the region. The product category usage, if you are drinking cola, for example, and also of media exposure. So the question is, why do we need this data? Why would you collect this data, and why is it valuable? Well, it's valuable because you want to see probably what are the relationships among variables, yeah? So we could want to see how product usage relates to demographics. In other words, you want to find out what kind of people drink colas. And why is that important? Well, remember, this is a marketing study. This is marketing data. So maybe you want to see how the media relates to product usage so that we can select the appropriate media to advertise in. Yeah, if Friends viewers tend to drink colas, that may be a good place to advertise your cola. So what we learn from this is that variables per se maybe are interesting, but what is also very interesting is to see the relationship among variables, yes, and try to find patterns. You can always take a numeric variable and make it an ordered categorical variable by using bins. So these ranges is what I'm calling bins. So we have in this case age that we have been working with. So instead of treating age as a numeric variable, it is common to break it into ranges. So for example, here I'm not giving numbers, but A1 to A2, A3, A4, A5, A6, A7, we are thinking about age in terms of bins. And the simplest case to see this is when we decide to use dummy variables. So this is a typical notation that we will find regarding dummy variables. And going back to the question about dummy variables are always 1 or 0, well, they're not always 1 or 0, but when we use regression analysis, we will see that it will be easier to make interpretation when you have made when you have given these 1-0 variables. For example, if we are talking again about age, we could simply use a dummy variable and define someone to be old, if older is more than 40, without any offense, and young is if it's otherwise, yes? So then 1 will mean old and zero will mean young. So it really depends on the nature of what you want to do, yeah? Maybe this is not specific enough for you to know if an old or young person is interested in drinking Coca-Cola. Yes, maybe you want to know more than that. You want to know if it comes from, if they are teenagers, if they are from school or whatever. So it really depends what you are looking for at the end, how you are going to treat your data. So first, let's concentrate in a single variable. In other words, we are going to see how we can infer information from a single variable, and then we will see how we can interpret information when we relate more than one variable. So the most interesting thing in statistics is understanding how variables relate to each other. For example, Friends watchers, Friends the program, tend to drink Cokes, Colas, smokers tend to get cancer. Well, that's a bit strong. But it is very important to get a sense of what variables are like on their own. We will first informally use the term distribution to talk about what a variable looks like. What do I mean by this? What is a typical value? How spread it is, and so on. And we will use the term more formally when we study probability. So let's talk about the distribution of individual variables first. Tables are always very handy when we deal with a lot of data, yeah? So in this case, we have our categorical variable that stands for the social grade. And what I have represented here is how that variable looks across all the households, yeah? So from my households, from all my sample, I have that 28 come from social grade 1, 151 from social grade 2, and blah, 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 120 from social grade 6. So the frequency is simply when you count the numbers that are in each category. Yeah, so this is super easy. We can plot that information. And remember that I think that a well-done plot or table can say more than 1,000 words, yeah? So I don't need to give a lot of information here. You immediately see what is in this graph. Yeah, we are classifying social grade. We have the frequency, and you can immediately know that most of the population in this sample belongs to the social grade 3, yeah. We will use histograms, and histograms are super handy because they are going to help us to know a bit more about our variables, yes? So we have an example of a histogram. We have a numeric variable. We have broken it down into categories, and then we are going to plot the table. So whatever numeric variable, what you will have to do is to make ranges, yeah? As we did before with education, we will do the same with whatever numeric variable I have. And those bins are here. Well, that's in the middle. Well, I will do it. Those ranges are here, yeah? So this means that less than 15, yeah? This is between 25 and 30, 30 and 35, 35 and 40. Are you familiar with this notation? Yes. For example, when I have an open bracket here, a parenthesis, let's call it, what it means is that 35 is not included, yeah? When we use, instead of a parenthesis, let's call it a bracket, then that means that 40 is included, yeah? So that is the notation we will be using. So this is a histogram, and histograms are going to be very useful, especially when we start talking about probability distributions, and you will see why. So the next histogram shows the time between customer arrivals at a bank. So in other words, you go to a bank, you see how long it takes to the second customer to arrive when there's a customer already there. And then you compute all these ranges and find out what is their frequency. What we can see from here is that these histograms has a heavy right tail. Yeah? What do I mean by a heavy right tail? This part here, yeah? You have outliers, if you want to call it like that. Let's call them extreme observations, yeah? So a histogram with a heavy right tail is called skewed right. Obviously, a histogram with a heavy left tail will be called a skewed left. And this is important. Well, it will turn out to be very important. And as the course progresses, you will see why. So let's be a bit more formal. And when we're looking at these histograms, and let's start defining some characteristics or properties of histograms. We are going to call a symmetric distribution if when we plot a histogram, the two halves of the histogram appear as mirror images of one another. So let's say we cut in half our histogram, and if we were able to see the left exactly the same than the right part, then we will say that that distribution is symmetric. Obviously, if I cut this histogram in half, I will not see that, yeah? They are not identical. So when you have a non-symmetric distribution, which I can also refer to as a skewed distribution, there is not such mirror imaging. For skewed distribution, it is quite common to have one tail of the distribution considerably larger or drawn out relative, or longer drawn out relative to the other tail. A skewed right distribution is one in which the tail is on the right-hand side. A skewed left distribution is one in which the tail is on the left-hand side. The above histogram is for a distribution that is skewed right. In finance, these kind of distributions are super interesting because it's when you start looking at, for example, extreme events. And extreme events are something that is going to be important in terms of insurance, risk management, yeah? So it's always nice to always plot our data and see if it's kind of symmetric, if we have these extreme observations and what we want to do. Some people just say, if you end up with a kind of plot like this one, get rid of the extreme values. Obviously, if your study is about studying these extreme values, that is not obviously what you're going to do, yeah? I'm always against this elimination of extreme values because you only eliminate when you are completely sure these are outliers, yeah? So what you have to take out from this very basic first plot is that it's always important to plot whatever data you have before starting working with it, yeah? It sounds obvious, but it's a very common mistake not to look at your data before working on it, yeah? So make this not, I hope this is not a mistake in your case, especially when you start writing your dissertations. So far, the data we have looked at, which is this survey data, is cross-sectional. Yeah, that is the formal definition for our data. The households in our survey are a cross-section of all British households at a particular point in time. So time is not varying, yeah? In cross-sectional data, order does not matter. We can sort out our households by age, social, etc. And none of our results change as long as we keep each row intact. Obviously, if we had a time series instead of a cross-section, what do I mean by time series? Well, information in different time periods of a variable, then you cannot change, yes, the order of this data because it will have huge effects, yeah? However, as I have said here, if we are talking about cross-sections, it doesn't really matter if Peter is analyzed before Jean or Jean below Sam, yeah? It doesn't really make a difference as long as you keep each row intact. Other examples will be samples where every role corresponds to a firm, a plant, a machine, etc. With a time series, each observation corresponds to a point in time. So we know what is a cross-section, we know what is a time series, and what is the name that I will give to the data if I have a mixture of both. For example, I have information about people, but I know how certain variable changes in time of these people. How do you call that kind of data? Panel data, yeah, or longitudinal data. So panel data is by far is very advanced for this class. Is actually it's not even going to be treated in detail in your research methods class, but when you get the basics of cross-section and the basics of time series right, there is a good chance that you can read by yourself the literature on panel data. Although having said this, there are so many new developments in panel data that it's difficult to catch up, yeah? But the basics of panel data, I think that with a good background of cross-section and time series, you can study this with not that much trouble. So here we have now a time series. We have daily data on the Dow Jones. And the data period that we have is the 1st of May 2000 to the 4th of May 2000. So here, obviously, I have an order because the order of observation matters. And what we normally do with time series is to plot the series in time order, just in a time series plot. Yeah. So we normally have the date on the horizontal axis, and we have whatever variable we are measuring in the vertical axis. So it's always a good idea when we work with time series to look at some plots and see a bit our data. We can learn a lot from plots. We can try to see informally if there are cycles, you know, if there is seasonality, if there are extreme values as well. So it's always nice to find this kind of graphs in your dissertations. We have various frequencies in time series data. As you know, we can have daily, monthly, quarterly, annual. Sometimes people is unsure, especially in dissertations, if they should be using annual data, monthly data, daily data, yes? Not necessarily daily data, because you have more data, is better than using monthly data, yes? And you will start realizing about that. It will make sense that if you have a very short time period, then to use a smaller frequency so that you have more information, yeah? But if you have a long time series, there's not always an advantage of using daily data, for example, instead of monthly data. So it really depends on your problem in hand, what you are trying to solve or what you are researching on, what kind of frequency you are going to use, yeah? For event studies, this methodology that I talked a bit before, for example, trying to assess what is the impact of a terrorist attack in the price of an asset, obviously it makes sense to look, for example, at daily data, yeah? You will not want to use monthly data in this case. But if you were going to use the GDP or other variables that are measured at a quarterly frequency, yeah, then it will make sense to concentrate in this quarterly information. Actually, almost every study that looks at consumption uses a quarterly frequency, yeah? So when using time series, we will have to decide what kind of frequency of data we will be using. Here we have an example of how does the monthly US beer production looks like through time, yeah? And from this very simple graph, it should have in the horizontal axis time, you can see that there's a kind of a pattern, yeah? So probably this pattern is related to the cold and the warm months during the year. Do we have Germans here? Germans, yes. In Germany, do you drink more beer during winter or during summer? All the time. So probably this is not a good example for Germany. Yeah, we wouldn't be finding these patterns. But it seems that in the US, probably they drink beer during barbecue time. So from a graph, you can learn a lot about your data. But here, obviously, we are not to try to guess what's going on in a graph, but to try to learn proper statistical methods to try to test if there's a trend or not, and try to test if what we will introduce later, data is stationary or not. So far, just take this as a very basic introduction, but it's always nice to have graphs to see how the data moves through time. The next graph shows monthly returns on a portfolio of Canadian assets, yeah? And what we can see here is a bit less obvious than in the previous graph in terms of patterns, yeah? We again have in the horizontal line time, which I should have written more carefully, and in the vertical axis we have the returns. This same information, which is the returns on Canadian assets, can be summarized in a different way, yeah? Here we only have a time series plot, and in the next slide, we have any questions? I can see someone, I can hear someone in the audience wanting to comment something, yeah? No? Honestly, feel free. So we have a histogram, and this is exactly the same data that we had in the previous graph. But now we are using a histogram. Remember, I already introduced these histograms. And they can be tricky, yeah? In the first one, you could think, well, this looks very much like a mirror image if I cut this histogram in half. But if you look at the histogram on the bottom, which is actually based on the same data set, looks a bit different, yeah? Still a bit symmetric, but it changes a lot. So what we learn is that a histogram depends on the bin size. In other words, it depends how you create your ranges, yeah? So the good news is that most softwares already compute the histograms for you. So you don't really have to think a lot about what is the optimal bin range. Normally this bin range is based on the number of observations. If you don't have many observations, it doesn't make sense to have too many ranges, yeah? So normally they base it on that. But sometimes you want to see more detail of the data, and it makes sense for you to being able to construct your histogram by hand, yes, not just allowing the software to do it for you. And we will have a couple of examples in our tutorial about this. Okay, so let's just briefly summarize. We have three kinds of data. We have cross-sectional, time series, and panel data. What we want is always to visualize our data before starting working with it. The best way to do this is either with graphs, time series graphs, if that is the case, and histograms also tend to help. And we will know and we will learn more about histograms when we start looking at probability distributions, yeah? Because many of the statistic methods that we will be using are going to rely on the normal distribution. And this distribution, we will try to link it to these histograms, but that comes a bit later in the course. So we have looked at graphs, and suppose that now we're interested in having numerical summaries of the data rather than graphical representations. I like graphs, but because sometimes they can be very misleading We just saw how different a histogram can be depending on the bin size. It's always nicer also to combine these graphs with some numerical summaries. Yeah? So what we really want to know about our data is what is a typical or average value and how spread out our variable out or how spread out or variable are the values. Yeah? Those are two basic questions we want to answer. And to do that, for example, let's look first at two graphs. We have in the top the monthly returns on a Canadian portfolio. And on the bottom, we have the monthly returns of a Japanese portfolio. By simple inspection of both graphs, you can think that both are kind of more or less centered at the same place. But you can also say that the Japanese data has more spread. Yeah, there's more variability in the Japanese data. That is what you can see from these plots. But obviously, there's a way that you can summarize this. And what we will normally use is the mean and the median. So this is supposed, my PowerPoint is not being read correctly. This is an X4, yeah, instead of an X, okay, I don't know what K is doing there. So we have observations. We are calling N the number of observations that we have. XI is the value of X associated with the ith observation. So this is only notation we will be using so far. Everybody knows how to calculate an average, yeah? I'm only writing this so for you to have the complete set of notation throughout all the statistics class. So we are going to denote sample mean with X bar, like everybody else. Believe it or not, a lot of people sometimes, well, not a lot of people. Some people have asked me in the past, what does that funny symbol stand for? That funny symbol is a summation, if you didn't know, yeah? So what you are going to do is to add up your observations from 1 to n, and then you are going to be divided by n. This is just a simple average, yeah? Let's be careful about our notation. When do we use x bar, and when do we use mu, yeah? I have written there, have you heard about mu? Mu is about populations. Yeah? So if you calculate the mean of a population, we are going to denote it with mu. If we calculate the mean of a sample, we are going to denote it with X bar. So going back to our Canadian and Japanese data, if we calculate what is the mean of Canada and the mean of Japan,